Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Gary Zier, Remax Elite, and Geno's East.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
And welcome into another edition of Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Got the name right this week, so that is good. Joined once again by Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio. He's been nice enough to do this 2 weeks in a row. Justin, what's up?
Hey, Chase, thanks again for having me. And yeah, it's fun to be here. And I mean, I appreciate the shout outs to PBR, but I mean, it's good to get the show name right.
So you missed it. I referenced Preds Insiders while I was doing Darren Donick and Chase. And when I referenced it, I said Penalty Box Radio. I did it again. And Willie was laughing and... I'm like, I can't get the name of this show right. I keep, you know, I just have PBR on the brain and not the beer. I have Penalty Box Radio on the brain.
It just shows that I'm really good at branding, if anything
you are.
Else.
You are. That is definitely true. You have done a tremendous job with that. So I'm glad to have you in again. We're at the home studios this time, but glad to have you on again this week. So we know that in everything we're going to discuss here is tentative, but it looks like it's been agreed upon that they have the return to play protocols in place for phase three, which is training camp, and phase four, which is actually playing the games in the National Hockey League. So this is a good step, obviously, in the right direction of getting back to playing. But what did you think about the number one? I feel like that we were all talking about Vegas and how Vegas was going to be a hub city. And at one time, there was even a conversation that Canada might miss out completely. Well, now Canada has both with Edmonton and Toronto. The Cup final and conference finals will be played in Edmonton as well.
They will. And it was a lot of information that came out late last night, even including what we're going to call these. It's not bubble. It's not the hubs anymore. It's phase four secure zones. That's the name for these cities. And I think that almost puts a little bit of fear into me of you better not try to get into these secure zones.
Right.
They're going to be checked and tested and everything. But it's funny to me how they call it that, because I mean, really even a throwback for me and people that have listened to me when I'm on any of these shows or Penalty Box Radio, I love making references to old school stuff. So it reminded me of Counter-Strike. If anyone when I played Counter-Strike back in the early 2000s, late 90s. So that's what it reminds me of. That's a map out there for it. But it is interesting to see. And obviously, as whatever side you're on when it comes to discussing the virus, there's no doubt that Canada obviously has less numbers. Yep. It's just a lesser population, number one. And then in the province, especially the province of Alberta, where you know, Edmonton is, it's the numbers have been so much better there as well. And in terms of securing those areas, because as we've seen in some of these towns, for instance, St. Louis, some players have not been the most responsible and have been going to bars and then testing positive. To me, that is one of the most frustrating things, is that you have some personal responsibility if you want to play the game, to not infect other people, especially your teammates or people on the staff there. And I can only imagine what it could have been like in Vegas. They would have had monitoring on the doors to hotel rooms 24/7 just to make sure. So, you know what? If hockey's going to get played wherever they have to go, it could be in another country, which it is going to be, but it could be in different multiple time zones, whatever it takes. I think people are just like, whatever, get it done, make sure it's safe, let's watch some hockey.
Yeah, no, I agree. I completely agree with that. It's all about safety. And I like how they worded that players have until 4 o'clock Central Time Tuesday to opt out. And how they put it was, we don't need to know why. You don't need a reason. There will be nothing held against you if you decide to opt out. Whatever you decide, we're cool with. Just let us know. I am totally fine with that. And it's a bigger discussion with sports in general, not just the NHL. Because I can understand that people might look at some baseball players opting out, and in the back of their mind there's that, yeah, but let's look at how the negotiations went. So do I really – for some, yes, there's a concern and there's truth behind it. But for others, is there maybe another reason? with hockey, we obviously don't know yet, as of right now, who might be opting out. I think we'll all look at it as, hey, you got to do what's best for your family. I mean, that first and foremost, to me, I understand that you make a good chunk of change playing this sport. I understand that. But at the end of the day, you're still human. You still have families that you got to worry about. So I do applaud the PA and the NHL for wording it that way, that, hey, if you opt out, then we're not going to ask why. We're cool. We'll see you next season.
And the way that, and looking at the breakdown as well, too, is that they thought about a lot of different scenarios that could take place in these few months, whether it's the birth of a child, yep, the death of a family member, you know, if there's a medical reason why you need to leave the bubble, that's secured as well. So they came with a lot of different things to address that we know could happen, because I'm assuming there's plenty of NHL players that probably, if they're planning births of children, which a lot of people do, especially like teachers, I'm sure some of them try to plan it for summer. And whereas I'm sure athletes try to plan it, if they really do want to start a family and have a planned child,
yep,
they're planning it for the off season of any sport. I'm right. sure that's what plenty of athletes do. And well, this is typically the off season. So I'm sure there's going to be some players that their wives are pregnant right now, and probably the time for their birth is sometime in July, August, sometime around there. So it's good to see that both sides went together and looked at different ways of how they can make sure this can happen, that they can participate if they want to, but still make sure they'll be with their families. And then looking at it too, that if the team doesn't make the conference final, the Stanley Cup final, that there are protocols to allow the families to come finally join the team, yep, members in there as well, because that would mean what, a total of 5 weeks or so,
yep,
minimum that they're going to be away from families, which I think is obviously more doable compared to saying 3 months straight, because there are road trips that sometimes will be 2 weeks that they might be away from family, and or if they're participating in the Olympics, then it's 2.5 weeks sometimes that they might be isolated, for instance. And that's kind of the way I'm looking at this, is that it's an uber secure Olympic zone. It's, yeah, kind of how this is looking, with just
that's the right way, yeah, to look at it, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a definite hub area, but you just can't interact with fans, but you can interact with other players in public zones, and how they have it set up to where they're going to have excursions that are league approved, like golf outings, I'm sure, things like that, where they can be socially distanced but still go out and do things to where they can remain active and have some fun and do things that they typically could do when they're at home. Just like with the NBA, they're getting pre-screenings of Marvel's Black Widow to them and their, right, hub in Orlando. So I'm sure the NHL is going to have some different things for entertainment purposes, because, I mean, I'm sure for mental health purposes, these guys are not going to want to think about hockey 24/7. They're going to want their downtime, because they're going to be playing a lot of games and a lot of things are going to be going on stuck in that Phase 4 secure zone.
So here's some other details that have come out on this. Each team will be permitted to bring a maximum of 52 individuals inside the secure zone, including ownership, players, coaches, executives, and staff. Teams are permitted to bring no more than 31 players. They have to submit that list by July 13, which is the opening of training camp. Each team will have at least one physician, one security representative, one club Phase 4 compliance officer, and one content creator / social media member included in the traveling party. Now that one, for what we do, is interesting, because having the social media content creator, you know, somebody like that, that I think is a brilliant idea, to have that person come in and be a part of the secure zone, whatever, the traveling party, but have that type of access to the team that, you know, we see all the time, but obviously these are different times. I thought it was interesting that they included that.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the kind of access people are going to be looking for. And especially, I know it was short-lived, but the new XFL, just in terms of having some more behind-the-scenes types of things, that kind of opened the door where people are looking, oh, wow, mid-game interviews with players, all these different types of things. So you don't have distraction, quote-unquote, of the crowd being there, that they're going to have to look at new ways, because just like with NASCAR coming back, because it's been back for multiple weeks now, the NHL, because it's another sport coming back, you're going to have plenty of people that are watching it for the first time. Here's an interesting way to introduce people to the sport, find new and unique ways to build up player profiles, build up team profiles, introduce people to the sport, finding unique camera angles that you wouldn't be able to get before because the crowd would be in the way, finding all these different behind the scenes stuff, because they're going to have to. They're going to have to come up with some unique content to keep people engaged. Because, yeah, there's games and everything, but most of these teams have been very good about having unique content and telling storytelling, things like that. Well, now this is going to be interesting, and I'm sure plenty of comedy is going to come out of player stories within the bubble and what they're going to do. So that access is definitely important.
Yeah, and I think that, like you said, you got to keep things creative for this. Also, there is a mechanism in place that at any time before or during play in the tournament, the NHL, the NHLPA, they have the ability to call it off, to postpone, delay, do whatever they need to do. Because as we have talked about with this, Justin, safety is of the utmost importance for everybody involved in this. We all understand the financial ramifications and why they want to get back. But at the end of the day, they want to keep their players safe. And, you know, this ties into opting out and players that may decide they don't feel safe and they don't want to play. I mean, we're seeing it in other sports right now. So I do think having that in place of, if we get there and we get started, and it doesn't matter how far along we are into this, if at any point it doesn't feel safe, we'll call it off.
And the NHL has the NHLPA, so the Players Association has the ability to contest anything that comes from Gary Bettman in the form of like an arbitration of grievance, depending on whatever Gary Bettman decides. So you can tell there's a lot that they've worked on with this, and that's why there's so many days and nights of meetings and phone calls to try to work through this, because they're trying to basically come up with a return to play CBA. That's basically what it is. It's a collective bargaining agreement just for return to play.
On top of the regular CBA.
On top of the regular CBA, yeah. So, and this is huge. I mean, they're trying to come up with a document. They're writing their own return to play constitution. And we just celebrated Independence Day and founding of a new country and everything too, and how much work that involved, years to make the constitution happen. And I know it's not this big of a deal, sports, compared to founding a country, but having a return to play plan that is suitable to lots of parties, knowing there's still going to be flaws and different loopholes that are probably discovered later, that they're going to have to continue to amend this agreement. But they're putting a lot together in a very short amount of time. People are going to say, well, they've had plenty of time to work on this. Well, this situation has been fluid since March, with new information always coming in, new information always happening, new tests arriving, new data arriving all the time. So they have to evolve every single time. And so just the ability for the PA to have some power as well to challenge things is very important, to where it's not like they're signing their life away, literally and figuratively, when it comes to this. And just seeing the amount of tests they're going to have to take place. What is it? 24 teams, 52 people per team. That's 1,248 tests. Mm-hmm. Plus the addition of the hotel workers, restaurant workers, food staff, beverage staff, bus drivers, everything. This is a big to-do, a big thing that this league is having to pull off. And so it's going to take a lot of people cooperating together. And that's where we've seen plenty of players giving some of their opinions on stuff, which is important too, that they have a say, because not everyone has felt comfortable just coming back to play, which just goes back to your first point on the league saying, you know what, if you choose to opt out, you opt out. Totally fine. So just having that ability just to bring it back around has been a big deal.
Yeah, completely agree with that. And, you know, there's a ton of other things that are going in here. Non-disclosures for players that test positive, even though I thought about that, I think we're going to be able to figure out some of the players. I mean, if all of a sudden, I hate, you know, in things like this, using a name, but we'll use a player that's not here anymore. Let's say Jordan Tutu all of a sudden doesn't show up at practice and he's missing for a few games. I think we can probably put two and two together of the reason for that. But to protect the player, to protect the family, you know, they're not going to release the name. So I do like that too.
I think Tutu is just stuck in the gulag on Call of Duty.
Yeah, there you go. That's probably it. So I just use a former player as an example. They have this all laid out, and you know, whether it's going to be perfect, I mean, nothing's going to be perfect. There's probably going to have to be modifications as we go, but I do like how they're working together. Again, the players, everything has to be agreed upon or has to be voted on, from the Players Association, from the owners. They want to get the entire package, which includes the CBA, and get that all ironed out, and then they vote on everything at one time. So not quite there, but we're very close. Major League Baseball, pay attention. This is how you do it. It's not that hard. Pay attention. So there you go. And wait a minute. Who is it that works with the Players Association? Donald Fear, isn't that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah, he should call his friends over at Major League Baseball and say, Here you go.
MLB and NHL already work together when it comes to streaming and things like that. So,
I mean, come on, let's do it with this stuff too. So there you go. He is Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio. I am Chase McCabe in for Ryan Porth this week on Preds Insiders. He is happily married now, and he will return actually on Thursday with a special edition of Preds Insiders coming up to discuss the return to play. So a special edition of Preds Insiders this Thursday at 6 o'clock right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. So you will not want to miss that. When we come back, players opting out. What happens if a player opts out? We will play the what-if game and discuss that. Chase McCabe, Justin Bradford, ESPN 102.5 The Game. And welcome back into Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Chase McCabe in for Ryan Porth this week, alongside Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio, as we discuss the return to play plan that looks to be in place. Now, tentatively, and that again, that is the key word, AOL key word that we're using in all of this, tentatively, players will have until 4 o'clock Central Time tomorrow to opt out of this. Now, I know I've seen that a lot of that is it could be a few days after they actually ratify this, so they could have a little bit longer. It's just getting everything in place. But what happens? Let's just look at this from a broad spectrum first, Justin. What happens if a player opts out? Okay. We know that they're going to basically be looked at. Okay. It's fine. No hard feelings. Like, we hope everything's well. Not going to ask any questions. Everything's good. But I think it also depends on the player. I think it, you know, if Connor McDavid comes out and says, hey, I'm opting out, the Edmonton Oilers are saying a word I can't say on radio. I mean, that's it. But each team is going to just have to deal with it as it happens.
You're absolutely right. It does depend on that. And I'm sure teams have been in touch with their players and getting a feel for things so they can start making adjustments and everything too. And you are right, though. It's one thing, say, for instance, if a Roman Josi says, hey, I can't do this. And it's another thing if you have someone that is typically a healthy scratch that says, hey, I don't feel comfortable doing this. And it's nothing against them. It's just skill level wise, how teams are built, that they're built in terms of you want your best players playing all the time. And when an injury happens, it's the same thing as an injury. If a team is out, say Seth Jones, who had a season ending injury before the playoffs were going to happen, and he just got cleared two weeks ago, and they're going to have him now. It's the same thing as injury. They were having to adjust and potentially make a run for the playoffs without their best defender, who is potentially going to win a Norris Trophy in the next few years too, a talent like Seth Jones, and now he's going to be back. So it's the same thing that Roman Josi, if he were to miss, or if Ryan Ellis were to be out, or if Pekka were out. Yes, you have Juuse Saros, but then you don't have the other option as well. Right. Phil Ford were to be out, then you start adjusting there. So it really is going to depend on that. I do think the Predators have a little bit of depth in terms of what was in Milwaukee that they can count on for offensive production, not as much in terms of defense, just because they're, I want to say heavy, but they rely upon their top defenders very, very much. And you have guys that can fill in from Milwaukee, but no one that's going to take the place of a Roman Josi or Ryan Ellis to that caliber of defenseman. So it really just does. It really depends on that. I know we're going to dive in a little bit deeper, but just broadly stating it, to agree with you, yes.
Yeah, my dog agrees too. So he wants everybody to know that he agrees as well. So he's barking at a squirrel or something here on Preds Insiders. But so let's talk about that depth for a second that the Nashville Predators have. You mentioned it, the defensive depth could be the issue. They don't have, you know, I think immediately thought of somebody like Matt Irwin, how you miss a Matt Irwin that you know could jump in and play for you. They got Korbinian Holzer at the trade deadline, so they can use him. But the depth overall, I mean, there's some talent in Milwaukee, but are they ready to get thrown into playoff hockey?
Right, and that's the big question. There's guys there that I'm thinking, boy, it'd be great if they had some regular season games under their belt more than anything else.
Right.
Okay, you know, if we lose this game, it's game 5 of the play-in round, then we're out. Oh, God.
Right.
It's going through my head right now. And they do have some young talent that in a few years could be very good, like a Jeremy Davies, who was acquired in the PK Subban trade. A puck-moving defenseman has a bright future in the NHL. but I don't think he's ready yet for this. Frederick Allard is one I think could potentially be a good fill-in as a 5 or 6. Same thing with Alexander Carrier, could be a fill-in at 5 or 6. But you start getting a little worried there, too, of, well, what happens if they have to play top 4 defensive minutes? Then you start getting concerned about getting exposed. As we've seen with Dante Fabbro, I mean, it's his rookie year, and obviously has a bright future ahead as a defenseman, but there are times when he was exposed, and that just happens. That just happens with young defensemen. It takes so long.
You got to have welcome to the NHL moments.
Absolutely. Seth Jones had it, and now look at him. That's just the way it happens for defensemen to develop. You have to get exposed and learn from those mistakes. But the playoffs aren't where you want to get exposed and learn from mistakes.
Right.
When it comes to offense, though, I feel a lot more confident in terms of what they have, especially because Elie Tolvin was finally coming into his own near the end of the AHL season. Then you have Rem Pitlick, who obviously proved his worth as being a guy that could fill in on the bottom 6 right now for the Preds. Philip Tomasino, I'm fully expecting to be an invite for training camp as well. Yakov Trenin had a great call-up as well, but he had a great year with Milwaukee too. So there are some guys there that they can absolutely rely on. Even Daniel Carr, potentially, I'm assuming, will be part of the training camp invite. And even if they're looking for some beef, you have Michael McCarron, who they acquired during the season, someone that potentially could be looked at to bring in for some beef. And then there's always some other players as well, like Anthony Richard, Patrick Harper, who signed his ELC. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do there. But I think offensive-wise, especially if you're looking to fill in a bottom 6 role, they have some talent there that it can at least fill in. But my concern would be on the defensive side.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you mentioned him, but Rem Pitlick is another one, you know, that can help. The I don't know if I want to call it the ace in the hole necessarily, but I do wonder what Elie Tolvanen will be. If they get into a situation, let's say just a big what if one of the wingers opts out and doesn't play. Elie Tolvanen, to me, depending on the role, but I think he would be one of the first you look at to slide into that spot. He's not playoff tested. He has had a cup of coffee in the NHL. But as you said, he was starting to come into his own in Milwaukee. So I wonder if the scouts, if they look at Elie Tolvanen as, hey, you know what? Maybe he's not ready, but maybe he's one of those types that he's wanted to be in the NHL so bad. You give him that opportunity again, you throw him to the Wolves and put him in this, he shines for you. It's a huge what if, it's a huge gamble, but it's also a situation that I'm glad they have somebody like him if they have to get forced into that.
No, I agree. And the thing with Milwaukee this year, obviously everybody knows they had a phenomenal year. They were favorites for the Calder Cup, but they had great balanced scoring. But Elie Tolvanen was second on the team in goals with 21 goals and fifth on the team in terms of point production with 36 points in his 63 games behind Daniel Carr, who is a known AHL ace, Cole Schneider, Tommy Novak, Alexander Carrier, defenseman, and then Elie Tolvanen in terms of point production. So he was showing that he could produce and score some goals, and he did a lot of that in the second half of the season for the Milwaukee Admirals. And so he's one of those players that it looks like he's finally coming to his own. We know in terms of coaching in Milwaukee that the development, Carl Taylor had done such a phenomenal job with that team, mixing young and veteran talent together to try to bring them together. And he absolutely
enjoy him while you have him.
Yeah, exactly. He's not going to be there long.
Right.
He is a true talent, and he knows how to develop players, how to communicate with them. And you can see what the Predators are wanting out of Tolvanen is not just to be the offensive guy, but he has to know how to play a little bit of a two-way game, mm-hmm. plan to rely upon him. But like you said, you can utilize him, and you put him in a position to succeed. And we didn't always see that with previous coaching staffs, and that's what would be my hope here, is that if you bring up a guy like Elie Tolvanen, who is starting to prove himself a little bit more in the AHL, and you say, okay, we're going to put you on a line here where people can get you the puck in your sweet spot, you make sure to shoot it. I think he's going to take advantage of that, meaning he needs to be in a top 9 role. You can't slot him into an energy line of the fourth line and expect him to succeed. And as well as shaking up the power play, give him opportunity in the power play where he's protected a little bit more on the power play. And that's where you want your snipers. That's where you want your guys with great shots. They don't have to be as defensively responsible. They just have to know how to score. And Elie Tolvanen knows how to score. And so a power play would be a place to slot him in. Even if you have other guys that maybe are putting up more production, try it out. Especially that's what training camp is going to be so important for. And like we've talked about before in previous episodes, how I talked about with Ryan Porth, is that it's hard to make decisions right now, like in goaltending or any of this, until we start seeing how these guys are in training camp, because everyone was in such a different position during the shutdown that you don't know what kind of shape they're in. Yes, they've been skating individually and with small groups right now too, but it's just to see how they're responding to being, have the pressure put on them, because they're going to have a 2-week training camp after being down for 3 months without any on ice abilities and expected to go and play. So a lot of it's going to come down to that training camp for decisions. And I don't want to say I'm excited to see it. I'm very curious to see what happens to some of these players.
Oh, I feel the same way. I am curious to see what they look like, what kind of shape they're in. Because as you just said, I mean, it's, and we've said this time and time again. I mean, how many, if you're a basketball player, you can go out in the driveway and shoot.
Okay? At least.
Yeah. I mean, some have their own courts, but if you're a hockey player, I don't know too many that have their own ice rink. It's completely different getting on rollerblades and going out in the backyard and doing that. It's completely different. So this is what we're going to see. But I guess the good news is every team has been thrown in the same situation. And so it's not that one really has the advantage over the other. Let me ask this, though, because we assume the goaltenders are going to be Pekka-Rinne and Juuse Saros. But how do you feel about Troy Grosnick or Connor Ingram as the depth players for the goaltending position for this team?
I'm pretty comfortable with the Predators goaltending right now. Like in terms of getting to your 3 and 4 for goaltending, that's pretty good overall, just given how they perform in the AHL and having the pressure on them to succeed. Goaltending, I would say, is one of the stronger things, just looking at it right now for the Predators. If you put everything on paper, how Saros was having a great year, especially the second half, like we've talked before. The second half, after he had a little bit of a rough patch, he had become the clear number one without it being said that he was the number one. And he was having some great numbers that he was putting up. And then how Ingram and Grosnick were basically splitting the season there. And Ingram is a steal. I know it's still early to say this, but to look at what the Predators have in Connor Ingram as future, and that they got him for a 7th-round pick in a couple years. It's great to see that in terms of the depth, that if there was an injury to happen or illness to happen, that I think having Connor Ingram especially, but even Troy Grosnick as well in the backup role to either Rinne or Saros, I think is a good position for them to be in. So I'm not concerned at all with the Predators' goaltending depth going into the playoffs like this, because I think they have guys that can be capable. Maybe not the best, but compared to other organizations, they have guys that at least have good pro experience, some playing time underneath them, have things that have happened to them as well to be in pressure, like Connor Ingram getting switched between organizations, having to deal with that, Troy Grosnick being a veteran as well. So I think all those experiences give the Predators some good depth in the goaltending, especially for this finishing of the season.
31 players, you carry 3 or 4 goaltender.
Oh, man, that's really tough. Honestly, I would carry 4.
I lean that way, but it also depends. You know, I think right now you have to look at it. Okay, are you going to have any opt-outs? If you don't have any opt-outs, then I think that changes maybe the way of thinking too. But, you know, I do wonder, like with goaltender, I mean, you don't have an e-bug. I mean, or you can't really necessarily have an e-bug in this situation. So, you know, you might have – I'm surprised that hasn't come up of we got to have a pool of goalies that – you know, can be the emergency backup goaltender that, you know, they're going to live in the bubble too.
Let's go to the stands. Oh, there we have a cardboard cutout. All right, put them in.
you will play goal. There you go.
Shoot to the corners.
We'll see how skilled these players really are. So, yeah, I just still, once you answer one question, you just have more. I mean, it's like the late, great Roddy Piper used to say, just when you think you have all the answers, I change the questions. So that's exactly what this is. So I want to ask you this question on the other side when we come back here on Preds Insiders. How much do you think the NHL has observed and looked at what's happening in other sports and their return to play plans and applied that to what they're trying to do? We'll discuss that when we come back. It is Preds Insiders, Chase McCabe, Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio here on ESPN 105 The Game. We're back here on Preds Insiders, ESPN 105 The Game. Chase McCabe in for Ryan Porth. this week. He will be back on Thursday with a special edition of Preds Insiders at 6 o'clock previewing training camp. So be sure to tune in for that alongside Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio here with you. Does great work with that organization. And I know you're going to have a lot of content coming up as we get ready for training camp, tentatively scheduled for July 13th.
Yeah, I mean, it's been kind of a break right now. We've been kind of slow on the content creation side because there hasn't been much. But as soon as things get going, we'll be back. As soon as we get going again, we'll be back on Wednesdays. I already talked to Porth about that. I just said, hey, we need the sport to be happening for us to have something to talk about all the time, for there to be new information and everything too. So I'm excited to get the crew together safely when we're able to and to start producing more content and actually have things to analyze and discuss and things to watch.
Yes, absolutely. So let me ask you this question that I threw out before the break. We've seen what the negotiations or lack of in baseball. We've seen how that went. And now you have a lot of players that are saying that they're not comfortable and they're opting out. Freddie Freeman is the first baseman for the Braves, probably one of the most notable that has tested positive for COVID-19. So we'll see what ends up happening with him. David Price, Nashville's own, he has opted out of playing. And then you have the NBA. The NBA looking at a similar structure to the NHL of having the bubble or the secure zones or whatever they want to call it in Orlando. How much do you think the NHL and the players themselves have been paying attention going on in other sports to help them make their decisions on what to happen here?
I think pretty close attention. And it's seen, too, more than anything else, is about what bubble life is going to be like. It's probably looking at and even talking to if they have – connections to talk with NBA players and MLS players, especially that are going to be stuck in Orlando, to see what they're going to be doing in their bubble, what they're going to have access to, what they're going to be able to do during downtime, because I can't imagine that many weeks for them when they're used to having some freedom with family and things of that sort and stuff like that to just say, oh, you are in your hotel room at the restaurant in the hotel, or you're at the rink, and that is it for multiple weeks. And I know people will scoff at that, but they're humans.
Right.
They're human beings. Yes, this is their job. Yes, they get paid a lot of money to do it, but that is their profession, and they still should be treated humanely when we look at this. And so those are the concerns that they can at least have something to do, because I bring it up a lot because it is something that I think needs to be discussed more in sports, which is mental health. And looking at what everyone on earth has had to go through these past few months, and athletes, yes, they still have to deal with mental health. We've seen it be a problem, especially in the NHL, with drugs and alcohol abuse, and what that's led to as well, is that we don't want to put these players in situations that could lead to bad habits and to other diseases later on down the road. That's not just COVID-19. We don't want to have them stuck in a bubble to where it leads them to other types of abuses that could cause trouble too. So I think all these are things that need to be getting talked about by more people. And I'm sure the players and the league have been talking about this too. So it's looking what other leagues are doing to make sure that these players can at least be slightly happy. Yeah. So having those excursions, like being able to go and play golf a little bit and having approved excursions and places to work out outside, areas to mingle on campus with other players, because most of these guys all know each other. It's a brotherhood out there. But then looking at safety procedures too, of where they have to wear their masks, what's required of them, when they get to see their families or communicate with their families, all those different types of things that we mentioned before are very, very important. And I'm sure they're looking at what the NBA was doing, what the MLS was doing, just to make sure they're kind of all in the same line, because I don't think one league wants to be very far above another league to where people are either jealous or calling it out saying, well, why couldn't you do that? They did this. You could have as well. So I think they all kind of want to be on a level playing field when it comes to access, abilities, and things of that sort.
No, I completely understand that and agree with it. And I know they've also put a clause in there that, you know, they're going to help families. Like if the player's away, they're going to, you know, help with things. So the league, in my opinion, doing everything that they should. And I know the players in the league, they're negotiating this. They're doing all the right things. But you brought it up, mental health. And there are some people that, you know, I grew up as an only child. So when we were going through the quarantine, you know, I was okay for a while. Like I'm used to being by myself, but then there became points where, you know, I missed my friends. I missed human contact. And it was, you know, yes, I was watching people through a screen or talking to people that way, but you know, I'm used to being able to go do whatever I want, whenever I want, just like everybody is. So asking, you know, a player, even though, and I don't want to hear the people go, yeah, well, they make millions of dollars. Well, you're still asking them to be away from their families. And you know, I'll use somebody like Matt Duchesne. If you follow Matt Duchesne on Instagram, guess what you see every day on Instagram? You see Bo. Mm-hmm. You know who Bo is? Bo's his son. You see Bo every day. So I can understand how difficult that would be for a dad, not a hockey player, a dad, to be away for upwards of 5 weeks from his young son and being able to have that time. So I totally get it. If a player opts out because of that, or, you know, just it goes through a hard time of having to, you know, cause Bo's not going to understand, like he's going to be wondering where dad is. And then he sees him through a computer screen and a young kid doesn't understand. So I get it that from the player's point of view, how difficult that would be. And I do like that there are steps in place that once they get to a certain point, once the number of people inside the hub or secure zone, whatever it is, is down, you go through security protocols and whatever they're going to do, you know, are they going to have RoboCops standing there at the door to let people in? Like, how is this going to work? But then they'll bring families in. I think that'll be good, but I can understand getting to that point, how difficult it's going to be.
It's going to be a little difficult. And I'm sure the thing going through some players' minds is, am I going to be in the right mindset to do this? And that's the challenge right now, because some have been very outspoken about things. And Matt Duchesne, like you said, is one of them that when he's been interviewed, asking about the situation and everything and no fans there as well, he's like, it's going to suck. Honesty coming from a lot of players. And that's what we've been wanting more of, as well as people that talk about hockey too, is more personality and realism coming from players and not cliche statements. And I think we've luckily been able to see more of that throughout the shutdown, because players feel like they have to be a little more outspoken because it's important for them to be outspoken. We've seen that plenty from the NBA. The NBA encourages personality from their players. And we're seeing that more out of NASCAR. Drivers being able to expose their personalities more and what they truly feel and have opinions and everything. But it's been so long awaited for NHL players, because it seems to happen when they're young and they're at development camp, or it's their rookie year, their second year, they want to make a name for themselves, and they kind of delve into that whole, yep, obviously, type of way to respond to questions. And we're seeing that more now, that we realize that they have a voice and there's a lot of peer pressure. We've seen that. There's some tweets last week that said how there could be potentially half of players that still don't agree with the return to play thing, but they're going to fall in line. And that to me makes me feel uncomfortable, because they need to have a voice. If there are things they're uncomfortable with, they need to voice it, not fall into the peer pressure, because they deserve to be able to fight for their rights as players. They are a union. They have certain rights as well. Yes, people, they get paid millions of dollars. That is their profession that they chose to go into and want to go into, and they're playing at the highest level if they can in the sport that they play. So they have the rights. But let's look at other sports leagues and what they get paid too. The NHL is near the bottom of this. So yes, they're still getting paid a lot, but it's nowhere near what other leagues are getting paid. But they still just, all of them still deserve their own basic rights and how they choose to feel that is safe. We are in, as commercials say, unprecedented times right now. And this is all new, and so everyone should be willing to evolve and adapt and do what they think is right. And luckily, the league seems to be working with them as much as possible. But I want players to be able to feel like they can speak out and they're going to have support. Yes, there's going to be trolls out there on the internet that don't like it, but they do overall, they'll have the support of people wanting to know how they feel. Do they feel protected? Do they feel safe? Do they think this is the right option? Because it is their league. They're the ones that play in it. They have the power.
Yeah, they do. And I've had several conversations with people lately about the voice of the player and how they do have that power to make change. And I feel like it's being used more and more. And I like that. It's good. Now, are we going to always agree with everything that anybody, not just a player, has to say? No, of course not. But they're using their voice and they're realizing that the power that they have. And I think that's very important as the league moves forward. So we're not there yet, but we're getting close to a potential return in training camp, opening on July 13th. Justin, when we come back, I want to talk about an event that is a part of these CBA negotiations that it's looking like NHL players will be a part of again. We'll do that to wrap up the show. Preds Insiders here on ESPN 1025 The Game. We're back on Preds Insiders, ESPN 1025 The Game. Chase McCabe and Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio. here with you on a Monday. Ryan Porth returns on Thursday for a special edition of Preds Insiders, previewing training camp, which is scheduled to open on July the 13th. So as a part of all this, and we said this earlier, Justin, they're trying to get the new collective bargaining agreement done as well. They want to get this all done together, and then they don't have to worry about it. Get it extended. And if you think about two significant events that have happened really in the last 15, 20 years, they missed an entire season due to a lockout, missed half a season due to a lockout. They've realized that lockouts are bad because the league's healthy. I mean, I know that this is obviously going to hurt things, but the league has been healthy for several years, and they want to keep it that way and be able to rebound once everything gets going again and is back to normal, or whatever normal is going to be. Part of the CBA negotiations have the players returning to the Olympics. They missed the last Olympics in South Korea, and I actually had a friend who was stationed over there. He went to some games. Went to some Olympic hockey games, and he's not like a huge hockey fan like we are. He recognized, though, some of the names, and he's like, aren't they kind of old? Like, didn't they play in the league a long time ago? I said, yes, they did. So that's kind of what you had with the Olympics. But I told this to Willie last week. I really fell in love. Like, I was a fan, but I really became a hockey fan during the 2010 Winter Olympics because it was so much fun to watch. And obviously, Shea Weber, Ryan Suter representing their countries, both with the Preds at the time. I love Olympic hockey, and I'm glad that the players are going to get an opportunity, at least it seems that way, to go back and play in the Olympics.
And, hey, in South Korea, you had a former Predator playing there. John Blum was on Team USA, just throwing that out there as well. But you can tell there was just a different feeling. For on the men's side. On the women's side, that was a big deal for what happened with Olympic hockey, with what Team USA was able to accomplish over Team Canada there. And then on the men's side of things, they're obviously missing the Olympic part. And the players want to be able to do it. They want to play for their country. And this has been the whole thing for the past couple decades, too, of looking at Olympic participation and then the NHL trying to say, you know what, we're going to go with the World Cup that we're going to do so you can represent your country and it won't interfere with the season. I tried that. And then some people love the North America, Team North America, and then Team World had some weird things going on there with the young guns. So you had to be under a certain age to play for Team North America with US and Canada. So you had some old guys on the team too. It was just kind of a weird, weird thing. And then the Olympics come and go. And so there's been the big push of wanting to go and play for the Olympics. And especially, you know, with Team Russia, what we see out of there, because, you know, Russia's Russia and what they like to do when it comes to Olympic sports. But it's been a big deal for the players and pushing for that in the next CBA to be able to participate in the next Olympics in 2022 in Beijing, and then also participate in 2026 as well to try to figure that out for at least the next decade of Olympics and what they're able to do and participate in that, because it does mess with the season. And this is where what we can take advantage of just as hockey people during this pandemic and everything is completely reevaluate the NHL season of when it starts, when it ends, how we want the fiscal year to be. All these different things are put into question now, because with the way they're doing this, at first I was all, hey, just cancel this one. Let's try to start the next one on time.
Right.
No, we want to finish this one. And then even if we're delaying the next one to December or January, we're going to do that too. And we're going to play the full 82 game season. Holy moly. That's a lot to try to squeeze in, because then that's going to push the next season to be delayed. And so why not reevaluate things right now? Is the season starting in October, the regular season starting in October, going through playoffs into mid-June? Is that the best way for the season to be developed? Or would it be better to shift it a little bit? And I say all this to lead me back into the whole thing of, boy, it'd be something if hockey could be played in the Summer Olympics. That would change so many things and make it so much easier, because it'd be during the off season. Or if sometimes Summer Olympics are a little bit later, like late August, early September, may get into a few days of training camp. But overall, it would make more sense. I use that in quotes because people are like, summer and hockey, well, it's indoors anyways. But it would make more sense for the NHL if they wanted the NHL to participate in it, for it to be there. It's not going to happen But I just love throwing that out there because that's the way to avoid it mixing up the season, since the Winter Olympics are in February, which is in the meat of the season, right before the trade deadline. So can you imagine a team on pins and needles hoping their player doesn't get injured?
Or noodles.
Trade him and noodles. I love noodles. and having to deal with that and the stress there too. So I understand the back and forth between the league and the PA on this as well, but overall, I would side with the players because that's something they want to do, and that's their voice. But they need to figure out a way to compromise to make it good for all the parties involved.
Well, and I'll say this. One of my favorite events that I ever got to go to and I ever got to cover was the All-Star Game when it was here. Love the All-Star Game. It was a lot of fun. It was the first year of the 3-on-3. John Scott was a big story, you know, at this one. But if you were forcing me to choose, I love Olympic hockey. So I would love to figure out a way to do both and to have, you know, to have everything. But if you're making me choose once every 4 years, then yeah, you go with Olympic hockey because that's something that the players want to be a part of. It means a lot to them to represent their country. And I think it's something that needs to happen. And it was missing during the last Winter Olympics. So again, a thing that we need to continue to monitor as they work closer and closer to a CBA. But I'm glad to be reading reports that it looks like they're going to be back in the Olympics starting in 2022. So that'll be good.
And a big thing too, yeah, the players want it, but it also comes down to that money and ratings.
All about the money.
I mean, look at the ratings for the game with the U.S. and Russia in 2010.
Yeah.
What that did. And then even building on just hockey in general as a sport, the ratings for the USA women versus Canadian women in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
for the gold medal game. I mean, it just shows how much hockey's growing and how we can continue to help grow the sport that we love by having the top players participate in it. And things have changed. Yeah, I love – oh, it's one of my favorite stories, obviously, of 1980 when you have amateurs – playing against professionals, but that's not the case anymore because it's not an equal playing field. If for some reason every country had a set standard of what is amateur and you're able to have the level playing field there, then yes, of course. But you know darn well Russia is going to use a bunch of players from the KHL that are playing professional. It wants to come to the whole, oh yeah, they're amateurs. They would never agree to it because they didn't before. Why would they right now? So we're never going to have that feeling of we have amateurs playing against professionals and they're going to win. It's just not going to happen like that anymore. And so you put the NHL players in it, the ratings go up, it grows the amount for the league because the world is seeing the best players being put on the stage and they go, well, what team does that guy play for? He plays for the Nashville Predators. I need to start following them. It just grows the sport and grows the viewership of the entire league when they're playing in it.
Well, as they say, we'll see how it all shakes out as they continue to try and get all of this done. Justin, good to see you again. Thanks for coming on, and we will talk again very, very soon.
Thanks for having me, Chase. Appreciate it.
Justin Bradford, Penalty Box Radio. That's going to do it for this edition of Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.